The annual debate on the minimum wage is underway, but this year the situation is already more complicated than usual. The National Assembly passed the minimum wage revision bill, which includes regular bonuses and welfare allowances to the minimum wage. This has already incited much debate within society, particularly from the labor forces. They held a general strike and protested the bill on Monday. And this may even hinder the minimum wage negotiations as the labor side threatened to boycott the panel. Minimum wage is an issue that has no clear or immediate correct answer, but the process to find the best answer will have to continue. I'm Catherine. This is Morning Wave in Busan on Wednesday, May 30th, coming to you live on BEFM, Busan Yonghe Bangsong 90.5 and 103.3. Good morning. Happy hump day to you. It's a little hazy this morning, and maybe it's just me, but I kind of sense this bit of kind of like moisture, humidity in the air. We'll find out the details in our weather report in a little bit. In the meantime, let's get to our main topic at hand, the minimum wage negotiations. Well, they're expected to be a long, long journey because, well, the already arduous process got a bit more complicated this week with Parliament passing the minimum wage revision bill on Monday to the protests of the country's labor unions. The National Assembly passed this bill with 160 yeas, 24 nays, and 14 abstentions. So first, let's go through what changes will be implemented with this bill. Right now, wages are consisted of base pay, in Korean it's called 기본급, and service allowance, 직무수당, and this was the metric used to make sure that employers were paying the minimum wage to their employees. But the minimum wage revision bill would include regular bonuses and certain welfare allowances into the calculation of wages. These would apply to those receiving more than 25% of a monthly minimum salary of 1.57 million won and welfare allowances exceeding 7%. For instance, say a worker received 1.5 million won for a month for base pay and an additional 500,000 won in bonuses. So under the guidelines of this year, that would be a violation of the minimum wage law, as that salary is under that 1.57 million won as stipulated by law. But with the implementation of the revisions next year, that individual's pay would be calculated as exceeding the minimum wage. And this is precisely why the labor side is protesting the bill, citing that even if the minimum wage goes up next year, the actual wages will stay more or less the same. But from the employer's perspective, they argue that the current system was stacked against them as they had to pay bonuses and welfare allowances, but they weren't counted as wages. And with the government's plan to raise the minimum wage to 10,000 won per hour, their financial burden was growing. The range of what is to be included in the minimum wage will only get wider. By 2024, all amounts of regular bonuses and welfare allowances will be counted into one's wages. And we can certainly expect backlash from the labor side. It's going to get even fiercer. Already, the Federation of Labor Unions, 민주노총, and the Confederation of Trade Unions, 한국노총, announced that they will not attend the reinstated Economic and Social Development Commission talks. Of course, this is going to have a significant effect on the minimum wage negotiations, as the Confederation of Trade Unions will also be boycotting that discussion. We have about, what, a month left until the June 29th legal deadline. And of course, all eyes will be on this issue. Can we come to an agreement on this issue? That is the big question. And let's go into our quiz today. Which country has the highest minimum wage in the world? Number one, Australia. Or is it number two, South Korea? Those are your two choices. Once again, which country has the highest minimum wage in the world? Number one, Australia. Number two, South Korea. Text topic. Do you think the current South Korean minimum wage, I believe it's 7,531, do you think it's enough? What do you think about this whole issue? Send your thoughts in to BEFM Busan Yongo Bangsong. And you can actually send them in through traditional text messaging, #9050, #9050. That will cost you 101. You can also add us as a friend through KakaoTalk and send your messages in for free that way. Or sign up and download our app, of course. And use that app to, of course, post your comments on the app comment board. Also, check out our Morning Wave and Busan homepage message board. And you might be eligible to win a voucher for food and drinks at Busan's leading cocktail bar, Fuzzy Navel. You can enjoy all the great Mexican food plus some spectacular cocktail shows. A lucky winner will get a pizza delivered to their workplace from Pizza Union and Centum. They offer generous, high-quality pizza without the high prices. For this one, you do need to send us your name, your work address, and then we'll pick a winner from there. We still have up for grabs a gift certificate to Baojun Brewery in Hwamyeong, where they have handcrafted beer with a 15-year history already. You can use this gift certificate in Hwamyeong, Onchon, Cheongwon, or Geodaedong. Also, a pair of free movie tickets from Megabox Haeundae Changsan. Go check that out. Also, coffee voucher for daily fresh roasting at 고품격 커피 공장 in Centum City. And for this hump day we have coming up for your morning, national news with Haley. And then in the second hour, we have our special interview. We're going to focus on Germany today because Germany's far-right Alternative for Germany, AfD party, has been in the news as of late. Let's find out why this is significant. We have also Ryan Estrada coming into the studio for Worked Up. I'll be back with news highlights.
Hello, now we play guitar in your bedroom.
And you destroy in a blatant character assassination.
John, in your
Sarah Palin's
interview,
character.
그러면은 연예인이세요? 기사 보도를 비평하는.
와 너무 훌륭해요. 네. Hold on a second.
Mr. President, let me finish. I'm gonna continue.
Morning Wave in Busan wakes you up with trendy music, hot issues, and the most updated news every morning. Begin your day with Morning Wave in Busan with Catherine.
News highlights.
To begin with national news, munitions factory fire kills two and injures five. An explosion at a munitions factory sparked a fire that killed at least two people and injured five others. The accident happened at the Hanwha factory in the central city of Daejeon at 4:17 p.m. yesterday. Two workers were killed and five others were taken to a hospital, three of them seriously injured with burns all over their bodies, and the two others with burns to their hands and faces, according to company officials and firefighters. President approves independent probe into online opinion rigging case. President Moon Jae-in yesterday legally authorized an independent probe into allegations that a power blogger tied to ruling party officials manipulated internet comments for political purposes. Early in the day, the cabinet approved the legislation on the appointment of a special counsel, which was passed by the National Assembly last week. The scandal centers on the influential blogger known by his nickname, Drooking. North Korea again demands repatriation of 13 restaurant workers. North Korea yesterday stepped up its demand for the repatriation of former North Korean restaurant workers who defected to South Korea in April 2016. In an urgent commentary, the North Korean Central News Agency, or KCNA, demanded the South Korean government show sincerity for the sustained development of inter-Korean ties and peace on the Korean Peninsula by sending back the defectors. Government seeks prosecution probe over overseas resource projects. South Korea's trade ministry said yesterday it asked the prosecution for investigations into fresh suspicions regarding the country's controversial overseas resource development projects. The ministry cited three projects, the Bolio copper mine in Mexico pushed by the Korea Resources Corporation, the oil field development by the Korea Natural Oil Corporation with Canada's Harvest Energy, and the gas field project in West Cutbank in northeastern British Columbia by the Korea Gas Corporation as being subject to the investigation. Pompeo and North Korean official to meet in New York. The White House said Tuesday local time that U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will meet with a senior North Korean official in New York this week as the two sides ramp up preparations for a potential summit between their leaders. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said in a statement that Kim Young-chul, a vice chairman of North Korea's ruling Workers' Party Central Committee, is traveling to New York and will meet with Pompeo later this week. Japan to push for high-level talks with North Korea in August. The Japanese news agency has said that Japan plans to push for a foreign minister's meeting with North Korea in August should the North make progress toward denuclearization after the summit between the United States and the communist country. Citing multiple government sources, Japan's Kyoto News reported yesterday that its government is considering ministerial talks with North Korea on the sidelines of the ASEAN Regional Forum slated for August 1st through 4th in Singapore. Two police officers and civilian dead in Belgium. A man has shot dead two female police officers and a civilian in the eastern Belgian city of Liège on Tuesday local time. The gunman also took a female cleaner hostage at a school before being killed by police. Four other police officers were also injured. The man's motive is not yet clear, but the incident is being treated as terrorism. Police sources quoted in local media said the man was heard saying Allahu Akbar, which is translated into God is greatest in Arabic. ABC Channel cancels show Roseanne after star's racist Twitter rant. ABC canceled its hit sitcom Roseanne on Tuesday local time in the United States after the show's biggest star Roseanne Barr went on what most are calling a racist Twitter rant. The cancellation has stunned Hollywood, and the revival of this show called Roseanne premiered to huge ratings just 3 months ago. Pre-production was already underway on a second season. However, Barr's talent agency, ICM Partners, also dropped her following her tweets. Barr went on a tweet storm, attacking Valerie Jarrett, Chelsea Clinton, and George Soros. Baseball club forced to hand over illegal cash received in trades. The baseball league office announced yesterday that South Korean baseball club Nexon Heroes will be forced to hand over illegal cash they received in two separate trades last year. The Korea Baseball Organization, or KBO, said the Heroes will have to fork over 600 million won that the club took from the NC Dinos and the KT Wiz in trades in March and July 2017, respectively. The money will go toward the KBO's Baseball Development Fund. That's it for the news right now.
News.
This terrifying sound echoes through the chamber.
Political debates.
Some of the deductions. And
Governor, I need to have you both hang up.
Experts from a variety of fields.
It's challenging. Patients cannot see our faces, and especially...
Hear all of these right here on Morning Wave in Busan with Catherine.
It's now time for our main topic at hand today. We're talking about the expansion of the range of inclusion in the minimum wage, 최저임금 산입 법이 확대. The minimum wage revision bill that passed the parliament on Monday will include parts of monthly bonuses and welfare allowances for employees' wages. The intent behind this bill is to protect low-income earners or those making less than 25 million won per year. All right, so according to the Ministry of Labor, less people from the low-income bracket will be affected by these changes compared to the ratio of people in the high-earning bracket. Under the current system, a large number of high-income laborers also benefited from minimum wage increases as none of their bonuses were included in the wage calculation. So, this bill will contribute to leveling out income polarization, because such high earners will no longer reap the benefits of the minimum wage hike. According to a government study, about 216,000 low-income earners, or 6.7%, will be impacted by the new law. Here's a quiz. You know, right now we are debating these changes and the effects of the minimum wage, but which country right now has the highest minimum wage in the world? Number one, Australia. Or is it number two, South Korea? Those are your two choices. Which country has currently the highest minimum wage in the world? Number one, Australia. Number two, South Korea. By the way, do you think the current South Korean minimum wage is enough? What do you think? Send in your messages to BEFM, Busan Yonghwa Bangsong. And of course, you might be eligible to win one of our fabulous prizes. All right, we're going to take a short song break. Here is Good Day by DNCE. It is now time to check in with Haley for our national news. Let's see what's going on. Hi, Haley.
Good morning.
It looks pretty good, but the dust levels, they say it's really bad right now.
It definitely seems that way. I couldn't. Visibility, terrible.
Right. So once again, just in case you are tuning in a little late this morning, you might want to take your masks with you today.
For sure.
All right, let's begin with the first story. The developments on North Korea. Oh, this is like going back and forth. What is the latest?
All right, it is meetings upon meetings in anticipation of the June 12th Singapore summit. So U.S. President Donald Trump confirmed last night that the vice chairman of North Korea and Minister of Unification, Kim Yong-chul, is on his way to New York. Kim arrived in Beijing yesterday morning around 10 o'clock, along with the foreign ministry's North American official of North Korea. So
right.
He is expected to arrive in New York anytime now, actually. His flight from Beijing kept postponing his flight to Beijing, presumably to take care of some matters with the Chinese officials.
I see.
But anyways, he is expected to meet with the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, for final negotiations. negotiations, final discussions ahead of the summit.
Yes.
And this part is very much a speculation, but there's also a chance that Kim Jong-sar may meet with U.S. President Donald Trump, as he is serving as a special envoy carrying a letter, potentially carrying a letter from Chairman Kim Jong-un.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time in 18 years that a high-ranking North Korean official has visited the U.S.
This is pretty major, right?
So,
while these discussions are going on, North Korea again took issue with this joint South Korea-U.S. military exercise.
Right, and this time it's regarding the annual Ulsei Freedom Guardian exercise that takes place every August.
Right.
So this demand came via an opinion piece in North Korea's state newspaper, which characterized the training as the very source that destroys the peace and security on the Korean Peninsula.
Mm.
So given that this is the second time that Pyongyang has brought up the joint military training exercises, you know, in the course of the talks for the summit, some experts are speculating whether this is their move to include this matter as a talking point in the summit with Trump.
I see.
So we'll definitely have to see about that. But in any case, the South Korean Defense Ministry stated that this is an annual defense. It's a defense exercise,
right,
and will take place without change.
Ah, well, the U.S., on the other hand, decided to put a hold on sanctions against North Korea.
Right. So according to an anonymous White House official, the U.S. was supposed to announce additional sanctions yesterday, actually, but postponed this indefinitely in fears that this may, you know, hinder the ongoing discussions with Pyongyang.
I see. And in the meantime, South Korea and North Korea are scheduled to meet the day after tomorrow, Friday, for a high-ranking officials meeting. So do we know who's going to be in attendance and what the topics may be?
This will be basically a continuation or a redo of the meeting that was canceled, that was abruptly canceled. So the South Korean government released the list of officials who will be heading to Panmunjom on Friday.
Okay.
So this delegation will, of course, be headed by Cho Myung-gyun, who is the unification minister, followed by deputy ministers and officials from land, transportation and infrastructure and culture and sports ministries, along with an official from the prime minister's office.
Okay.
So this is basically more or less similar to the list submitted for the previously canceled meeting that was supposed to take place earlier this month. But, you know, given the list of individuals from their respective departments, these officials will be discussing economic issues connecting the railroad between North and South Korea, the August 15th displaced families reunion, and the joint entry to the Asian Games.
Yes, right. Well, you know, given the circumstances and what happened, just like a week ago, Changwade is staying, I would say, extremely cautious on making any public statements in regards to the Singapore summit, right?
Right.
But it did make a rather critical statement against media coverage of the event, at least one media coverage.
Right. So what happened is the Changwade spokesperson Kim Il-gyeom wrote a rather scathing commentary about the reports made by Joseon Media Group and demanded that the newspaper issue a correction on three counts.
Okay.
So number one, what he's taking up issue, it's number one, they reported that the National Intelligence Service team rushed to Pyongyang the day of the South Korea and U.S. summit. So alluding to how the South Korean government is kind of in very close discussions reporting to the Pyongyang government, right?
Okay.
Number two, according to their reports, once again, they found evidence that North Korea did not actually blow up the Punggye-ri test site. And number three, North Korea had requested $10,000 to American media to let them, Americans, report on the Punggye-ri dismantling.
Ah.
Right. So Kim wrote that not only is this false, but such articles are seriously dangerous because circumstances being what they are, one article even may hold great influence and send the wrong message to either parties.
I see.
So the broadcasting company only responded back that this sort of comment from the Changwade spokesperson is very rare and that the truth will come out eventually.
Huh.
Right. So we are, you know, in any case, very much walking on thin ice, and, you know, we'll have to keep a close watch on not only the interaction between Changwade and the media company,
yes,
but also how reports affect the general atmosphere.
Oh, yes, indeed. I mean, we are in broadcasting and we know very much how one person's, you know, statement or opinion can sway other people. That's why we as broadcasters need to be very careful. All right, let's move on and talk about parliamentary news. Yesterday was the 70th anniversary of the National Assembly.
Yes, and the parties held a commemorative ceremony to, you know, renew the meaning of the Constitutional National Assembly created back in 1948. And this also was the last day for the sitting speaker of the National Assembly, Chung Se-kyun's term. So in his speech, he emphasized the importance of partisan cooperation as a basis for democracy. So in that light, while the parties agreed on the importance of cooperation, they did show some significant differences on major issues and how the parliament has been dealing with them.
Yes.
So for one, the leader of the Democratic Party, Chu Mi-ye, stated that the National Assembly still does not have the full faith of the people, especially pointing to kind of the letting go of the president's constitutional amendment bill.
I see.
Right. And Liberty Korea Party's leader, Kim Sang-tae, he agreed that, you know, the National Assembly does need to go through with the constitutional amendment, albeit not the president's version. And also the minor parties, Path and Future Party, Democratic Peace Party, and Justice Party leaders had more of a critical tone and urged that the National Assembly does need to gain the trust of the citizens back.
Ah, well, of course, the way to gain this said trust might be to pass the necessary bills. Where is Parliament on the bills?
Right. So the most disputed bill on the floor right now is the Parliament's consent on the arrest of the Liberty Korea Party member Kwon Sung-dong. So the leader of the Democratic Party labeled this failure of to pass the bill as, you know, creating what she called a bulletproof parliament. Right. And the Democratic Party is adamant on not extending the National Assembly sessions into June. Because what happened is over 100 Liberty Korea Party members submitted a form requesting extra sessions for the parliament because sitting National Assembly members cannot be arrested as long as the parliament is in session. Right. And on another controversial matter, the president approved a special counsel on the Drooking issue yesterday.
Yes.
So this will signal the beginning of the first special prosecution for the Moon Jae-in administration.
Indeed. So, of course, in terms of the National Assembly, you know, commemorating its 70th anniversary, let's really hope that the lawmakers, you know, I know there's always something political going on, but in terms of really working for the citizens, the people of Korea, it's really, really important. All right, next, let's move on to a story that we've been covering. I'm talking about the Korean Air owner family. They've really been in the news constantly, consistently in the past few weeks. And this time, let's talk about the wife of Chairman Cho Young-ho, Lee Myung-hee, who actually stepped into the Seoul police station for some questioning.
Right, and Lee Myung-hee is one matriarch of the Hanjin Group family, as well as a sitting board member of the Iru Foundation. And like her two daughters who went to the police before her, she responded to reporters' questions with only an "I'm sorry for causing this controversy," but denied any specific allegations.
Right.
So she is facing allegations of physically and verbally assaulting 11 employees, as well as obstruction of business. So she was summoned to Seoul Regional Police on Monday, the 28th, as a suspect in the matter.
Right. And, you know, it wasn't a huge surprise. She didn't deny the allegations, correct?
Right. So she was quite active, according to the police, during the course of the questioning and in refuting these charges. So she admitted to some of the charges, but claimed that she doesn't remember most others, especially related to assault. So according to the police, they've gathered over 10 victim statements, including former and current employees of Hanjin Group, as well as her household staff. The victims claimed that Yi threw things at them like scissors and flower pots, the ones that could be considered as weapons almost.
Oh, yes, yes, especially the whole scissors. But, you know, do we know what's the next course of action for the police?
Right, so they are organizing these victim statements, CCTV footage, and even e-statements, and are looking into pressing additional charges for habitual violence and special assault.
Yes.
So you see, because in just regular assault charges, mm-hmm. the police cannot bring up charges if the victims do not directly file them against the perpetrator.
I see.
But in habitual, consistent, or special assault cases,
yes.
these are prosecutable regardless of what the what kind of agreement is reached between the parties, right? So the police is also considering requesting an arrest warrant against E.
Right. So this is getting quite serious in terms of the allegations that are being lodged against her. I'm sure a lot of people are wondering what's going to happen next.
Right.
We'll give you the news as it comes along. All right. Let's move on and talk about this story. The trial for former President Lee Myung-bak has begun, but there's been a bit of a friction between the court and Lee's side.
Right. So what happened is that the former President Lee failed to show up to the second trial that was scheduled on Monday. And as a result, the court decided to postpone this trial. So the judges seem fairly determined to have Lee present for the proceedings.
Yes.
And the judge has already requested Lee's attendance to his attorneys upon receiving his notice of absence that was given last week.
Mm-hmm.
As well as they also sent a direct summons to Lee in prison. So, but his counsel explained that Lee's blood sugar levels are very bad and he's in generally bad health.
Mm.
And the counsel advised Lee to submit a written excuse for his absence. And Lee also conveyed the message that he will attend the trial only if the court notifies him beforehand during the specific trials where his testimony is needed.
Hmm. Well, I don't know about you or our listeners, but it seems that, this is quite similar to what we kind of saw during former President Park Geun-hye's trials, where she basically boycotted all of the later trial.
Right.
So is a court legally in the right to order Lee Myung-bak to attend his own trial?
That apparently is entirely up to the judge. So the judge has said that Lee Myung-bak is under a legal obligation to sit in his own trial. And Lee Myung-bak's side is considering as a violation of his right.
Mm.
So there's definitely a difference in opinion, but ultimately the judge ordered the defendant Lee to attend every remaining trial.
Mm.
And if indeed he is truly in bad health, he is to show up anyway, and then they'll excuse him after deciding upon that.
I see.
Right. The judge also stated that given Lee's condition, what he saw of Lee's condition in the first trial,
mm-hmm.
he presumed that Lee wasn't good enough health to attend the remaining trials.
Okay.
And it is against the law for a criminal defendant to selectively attend his own trials.
Meaning he can't pick and choose
right,
when
exactly,
to show up.
Right, exactly. Okay. So the former president, upon hearing this from his attorneys, is said to have been very outraged at this decision.
Mm-hmm.
And he told his counsel that he will decide on future appearances based on his health condition.
So it sounds like he's kind of digging his heels.
Right. So neither side is giving up.
Okay.
And, you know, for now, yes, once again, they are really kind of, both sides are adamant on whether he will attend or he won't.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll definitely have to keep our ears to the ground and see what happens next.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for covering all the national news, Haley. And of course, we will check in with you next week. Thank you.
Thank you. See you next week.
And remember, we're looking for the name of the country with the highest minimum wage in the world right now. Number one, Australia. Number two, South Korea. Here's our next song. This is Evergreen by Westlife.
That's covering fire from there.
Can we help people manage this disease?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and there are certainly many physicians.
You have. It's very, very interesting, Catherine. These are fantastic questions.
Well, aside from maybe the extended hours, right?
That's absolutely correct. Your research is impeccable, Catherine.
Thank you.
Tired of searching for a great morning show? If you're listening to this, you're tuned into the right frequency. Don't touch that dial. Stay tuned to Morning Wave in Busan.
It was an extraordinary act of bravery. In just 30 seconds, a young man scaled a building in Paris on Saturday night and saved a child who'd been dangling from the fourth floor. Mobile phone pictures of the heart-stopping moment went viral, prompting a search for the hero. He was soon identified as 22-year-old Mamadou Gassama.
I saw a boy who fell from the fifth floor. I think I like children a lot. I don't want for something bad to happen to them in front of me. It would have broken my heart. I ran. I thought of ways to rescue him. Thank God I climbed up and I saved him.
The next day, the mayor of Paris said she'd spoken to Gassama, revealing he was a Malian refugee without papers. He explained to me that he had arrived from Mali a few months ago, dreaming of building his life here. Thousands of people had signed an online petition calling on France to grant Gassama residency. Hailed as a hero by so many people, he was invited to meet the French president.
When I began to climb, it gave the courage to keep going.
So it all happened very fast.
After I saved the child, I suddenly became scared. The police came and took us inside the apartment. I was shaking all over.
Gassama had arrived at the Élysée as an illegal immigrant and came out with a promise of French citizenship, an award for his bravery, and a job with the fire brigade. In the neighborhood where the events took place, people had gathered to look.
Well, this is where that amazing rescue took place. If you look up at that fence with the sharp points on the top, Mamadou Gassama would have had to scale that, then up those four balconies. And from this perspective, it looks incredibly high. And that is why his act of bravery has really captured the imagination of so many people across France and across the world.
I think he did it spontaneously and did not think it would have this impact. It's great he's been recognized.
French authorities say the father of the boy had gone shopping, leaving his son alone. He's been taken into custody. Meanwhile, Gassama's coming to terms with his newfound fame in a country where the debate over refugees has long divided opinion.
That was a clip from Al Jazeera, and this story gets even more fascinating as we dig a little deeper. Apparently, according to CNN and multiple reports, the father of the young child who was dramatically rescued from that Paris balcony over the weekend was out going to the market to buy food. And then on his way back, he decided to play a smartphone game. We've talked about in the news, Pokemon Go. Yeah, that's why his four-year-old had apparently been left alone at home alone. And what even gave me bigger goosebumps is the fact that, according to the neighbors, this family lives on the sixth floor. But where was the boy found dangling from? The fourth floor balcony, which leads to people saying he must have fallen two stories. And, you know, because of what people say is this miracle, he was able to hang on to the balcony until this young man, Mamadou Gassama, climbed up four floors from the exterior of the apartment to save the dangling child. And as you heard, he has been offered permanent residency, which might lead to French citizenship and even a job with the Paris Fire Brigade. And according to the news, the father, he faces up to 2 years in prison for abandoning his parental responsibilities. He is said to be devastated by the consequences of his actions, and has since this, you know, then this incident, they have been reunited for now. This was your hot clip for Wednesday. Welcome back, everybody. This is BEFM, Busan Yongo Bangsung's Morning Wave in Busan special interview. Thousands of supporters and opponents of Germany's far-right Alternative for Germany party, also known as AFD, they have held rival demonstrations in the capital, Berlin. So to discuss this more and what the different groups, what they are all about, we have invited Professor Oliver Schmidt. He is a professor in the Departments of Political Science and History and director of the Center for Global Studies at the University of Victoria. Let's welcome him to the program. Hi, Professor. Thanks for joining us.
Morning.
Yes, yes. So if our information is correct, it seems maybe about, give or take, 5,000 people attended this AFD march last Sunday. So can you tell us a little bit about this group first?
The AFD is a political party that was formed about 5 years ago, and they've undergone quite a substantial and dramatic political transformation. Originally in 2012, they started off by a group of business people, professors, journalists who were not happy about the management of the Eurozone crisis. At the time, Germany was, you know, debating whether to bail out countries like Greece that had very high debt levels. But essentially, they were Eurosceptic, but not really against the European Union. But over the past 5 years, we have seen that this party has moved very quickly to the right, and it is now comparable to parties like the Front National in France or the Freedom Party in Austria,
yes,
displaying a very aggressive nationalist, anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim approach to politics.
Mm.
So they have basically taken over a space that the current governing Christian Democratic Party under Angela Merkel has vacated by moving more to the center, and they have exploited the opportunity to form a populist nationalist opposition.
I see. Well, thank you so much for explaining what AFD is all about. So if we go back to what happened in terms of this rally or protest over the weekend, tell us a little bit about that day, because apparently there were also rival demonstrations too, correct?
Yeah, that's right. The AFD had hoped to bring out actually far more than actually came. As you mentioned in the beginning, about 5,000 of their supporters showed up in Berlin.
Yes.
They had, you know, hoped for about 10,000 as a display of protest against Germany's refugee policy. And as a sign of strength, your listeners should know that for the first time, Germany has a right-wing political party in federal parliament, basically since 1949 with the elections of last year in September.
Mm-hmm.
And they are now the main opposition because we have a grand coalition governing Germany. So they hope to have this display of public support and visibility in Berlin. Now, these 5,000 people were met by, you know, some estimate 20,000, but I heard also numbers that are more closer to 50,000 counter demonstrations. And those people were very much concerned about instigating hatred against immigrants, mm, against an overly nationalistic approach to politics.
Yes.
And, you know, the xenophobic tendencies that go with this.
Mm. So what exactly is the beef in terms of AFD, what they don't like about the Christian Democratic Party, or more specifically about the Chancellor Angela Merkel?
It is mainly, you know, the current claims of the AfD are focused on the implications of the refugee crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Germany took in about 1 million refugees in 2015 when Chancellor Merkel couldn't find a European solution, a kind of a common asylum policy in Europe.
Yes.
And so Germany took in this huge amount of refugees, and it has created some problems, although Germany is coping quite well.
Right.
But this has instigated the notion that Germany is no longer in control of its borders, it's taken mm-hmm. in far too many foreigners. And I think it has in a way mobilized the constituency of the AfD that said it is enough, Germany shouldn't accept more foreigners and immigrants into the country.
Sure.
And it has also stimulated a kind of, as we know from Trump, a kind of Germany first, a kind of very nationalistic attitude towards politics amongst the AfD supporters.
I see. And in terms of how Merkel has been responding to not just the AfD, but against just average, maybe German citizens who are not so keen about the wave of refugees that did arrive. How is she trying to mitigate this?
she already had to pay quite a political price in the last elections, as I mentioned, in 2017.
Yes.
She lost quite a bit of support, and you know, we saw the rise of the AfD to 12.6% of electoral support. And what she has done is also to react to say, we can't no longer continue Germany's very liberal and open policy towards refugees coming mainly from Africa across the Mediterranean Sea.
Right.
So, you know, what she did was to address this in terms of coming to an agreement with Turkey, paying basically Turkey to keep most of those refugees on their territory. And if you look at the numbers, you know, the numbers of refugees coming to Germany, the new applicants for asylum, it's down to about 180,000. So we have seen a dramatic reduction in people coming to Germany claiming asylum. So in a way, what we've seen over the past couple of 2 or 3 years is now that the German government under Angela Merkel has put measures in place to reduce those numbers quite dramatically. So in a way, the rise of the AfD already had an impact in terms of a tougher immigration law and policy in Germany.
Ah, well, that takes us to our next question, Professor. I'm very curious, now that you've already mentioned this dramatic drop in asylum seekers, do you think that the number of supporters for the AfD will actually go down, or do you think that they have enough of a strong hold, at least in terms of the support, that they will continue to grow in German politics?
Yeah, this is a very good question, because it speaks to the also the broader issue of the rise of nationalist populism across Europe and also in North America.
Right.
It seems that these actors, they have hit a nerve, that people are often not very happy in terms of the long-term implications of, if you want to call it, globalization, international trade, immigration in terms of cross-border mobility.
Right.
And what we see is a kind of a, if you call it, a sovereigntist reaction to this. You know, it's back to the nation state. You know, it is only our community that can protect us from the woes of, you know, an excessive form of globalization. And it seems like other parties across the continent, that the AfD has hit a nerve, that people feel threatened, they feel no longer secure, they feel they're exposed to the threats that come with some of the globalizing trends. So maybe it was the refugee crisis that triggered the success of the AfD. It will not simply go away by reducing the numbers of those refugees. I think the AfD is here to stay, and partly this is due to the fact that the CDU, the Christian Democrats under Angela Merkel, have moved to the center politically. They've opened up a vacuum on the far right that the AfD has very cleverly occupied. So I can see that within the spectrum, the party spectrum of Germany, there is no room for a more extremist, anti-immigrant, and anti-EU party. And, you know, the frustration, it seems, with how the economy is going in Europe, some of the policies of the European Union, the AfD has given voice to this kind of opposition. And I think at the moment, the surveys indicate that the AfD is actually getting closer to 20% in support. So it is, you know, it is, I think, a political phenomenon that we will have to deal with in the foreseeable future.
I see. Well, I do want to thank you so much for your time and expertise in covering this very hot issue. Thank you, Professor, for joining us today. We do appreciate it.
Thank you for your interest.
Once again, this was Professor Oliver Schmidt from the University of Victoria, where we talked about what has been going on in terms of this AfD, Alternative for Germany party. Definitely has a strong, at least a foothold in Germany, it seems, in politics. 12%, maybe going up to 20% already. Such a young party. And thank you for your interest in this special interview. Let's get to our next song. This is New to Me by Sunshine State. It's time for your real-time report. Let's see what's trending right now as we speak. At number five, we have air purifier makers. Well, why is this trending? Well, apparently, South Korea's corporate watchdog yesterday levied a combined 1.56 billion won in fines against Samsung Electronics, Kuwait, and four other air purifier makers for providing insufficient and misleading information on their products. So you've probably seen the ads where they say, oh, if you use this air purifier, this will remove 99.9% of all the bacteria and viruses in the air. Apparently, this may be misleading. And as, you know, this market is so hot, well, we might want to do some more research as consumers. Number four, we have 52 hours. Well, why is this in the news? President Moon Jae-in yesterday instructed the government to quickly implement its extra budget to create more jobs and called for efforts to smoothly implement the cut in working hours. The president insisted on the new 52-hour-per-week limit on working hours, that this will also create new opportunities for employers. And number three, we have two names trending together, Kim Young-chol and Pompeo. The White House said on Tuesday local time that U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will meet with a senior North Korean official in New York this week as the two sides ramp up preparations for a potential summit between their leaders. So, of course, that senior North Korean official most people seem to think is Kim Young-chol, a vice chairman of the North Korea's ruling Workers' Party's Central Committee. Next up, we have a name, Yang Seung-tae. Supreme Court Chief Justice Kim Myung-soo yesterday left open the possibility of investigating his predecessor, Yang Seung-tae, amid allegations that Yang tried to curry favor with the former Bakugan government to get support for his agenda to make major changes to the court. Yang is also suspected of ordering the administration of the judicial system to classify judges according to their political and ideological leanings and monitor activities of judges who were not supportive of his leadership. At number one, we have the U.S. stock market. Stock markets in the United States dropped on Tuesday amid concerns that growing political uncertainty in Italy and simmering tensions over Chinese trade could weigh on global economic growth. The S&P's 500 stock index fell 1.2%, making this its third straight decline. Financial shares were among the worst performers as developments in the European markets seemed to reawaken fears of debt crisis among investors. This was your real-time report. Listeners, I'm going to give you your traffic report first because I want to make sure it's as current as possible. There is some traffic congestion on Danggam-lo from the Danggam Patrol Division going towards the Danggam Samik Apartment 3-way intersection. Backup on Changdeon-lo from the Onchonjang 4-way intersection toward the Onchongyo 4-way intersection. Also, another bit of congestion being reported on Dongmyeong-ro from the Yongdang-dong area towards the Dongmyeong 5-way intersection. For the weather report, it is cloudy. Fine dust levels are still bad. Yellow dust levels are okay. Temperature-wise, 22 degrees Celsius. It's going to go up to 26 today. All right, so yes, this is, of course, Morning Wave in Busan here on BEFM, Busan Yeongo Bangsong. Let's get into our main topic. Today, we're talking about the minimum wage. You know, this inclusion expansion bill of the minimum wage is one of the most hotly contested topics within the political and social spheres in the country right now. The revisions will include parts of regular monthly bonuses, and welfare allowances into calculations of the minimum wage. The bill passed with an overwhelming majority in Parliament. We're talking about 160 yeas, 24 nays, and 14 abstentions. By the way, you might be wondering, what is a yay? Yay means yes, nay means no. That's how they do the vote count. But still, voices of opposition from these 24 lawmakers and labor unions are pretty fierce. Opponents argue that these changes will bring down the actual salary of those that earn just above the minimum wage. They also add that these revisions ultimately accommodated employers and businesses, their requests that came about as a result of the 16% minimum wage hike last year. Representative Lee Jung-mi from the Justice Party even stated that she will directly appeal to President Moon Jae-in to exercise his power to veto. So, as you can see, this is such a controversial issue. Whichever side you stand on, I certainly hope that there can be more of a cohesion, more of a compromise. But in all likelihood, someone's going to feel like they got the raw end of the deal, right? Here's our quiz, though. Currently, which country has the highest minimum wage in the world? Number one, Australia. Or is it number two, South Korea? Those are your two choices. Text topic, do you think the current South Korean minimum is enough? Let me know what you think. And you might be able to win a voucher for food and drinks at Busan's leading cocktail bar, Fuzzy Navel. A lucky winner will get a pizza delivered to their workplace from Pizza Union in Suntem. You could also win a gift certificate to Baojin Brewery, right? In Hwamyung, but you can use this one in Hwamyung, Onchon, Cheongwon, or Geodaedong. We still have tickets from Megabox Haeundae Changsan or a coffee voucher for daily fresh roasting at Gopumgyeok Coffee Gongjang in Suntem City. All right, so I do see a 0579 name checking in nice and early with us today, sending us a follow-up saying, as Korean minimum wage goes higher, employees will be happy about it, but it'll give more pressure for employers. Yes. We also have 0939 names saying, good morning. Oh, it's cloudy today. How are you? Thank you for asking. I'm doing great. Well, today's answer is, oh, I wish I could read it right now, but I can't. That would be a dead giveaway. And they add at the end, I wish and pray that everybody has a nice day, everyone. Please, no more rainy days. And I definitely ditto that sentiment. All right, let's get to our next song. Here is Make Me Move by Culture Code. It is time for our final segment here on Morning Wave in Busan on BFM Busan Yonghwa Bangsong. We have Ryan Estrada back in the studio. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Ah, well, it's Wednesday, smack in the middle of the week. I think this is a time where we need to kind of encourage people out there.
Absolutely.
Because so sometimes, you know, we complain. It's normal, right?
Yeah, but and worked up, I want to show people that, maybe it's not the worst day at work.
Maybe you shouldn't, you know, throw your resignation into the face of your boss today. Maybe not today. So let's get into some of the stories.
So today I wanted to talk about people that work on the phones.
Ooh.
Call centers. Maybe it's just people who answer the phones at a department store or
sure.
at a bank or customer service lines. And, you know, because they don't get a lot of respect because people think, oh, you're just working on the phone. You know, there's people
right.
out there breaking their backs and
like,
doing
how
physical
skilled
labor,
can that
but
job
you're just
be, right?
chilling in a chair, drinking coffee, talking on the phone. That must be easy, right?
I disagree.
But
I think, like,
yeah.
having to answer the phone and deal with an array of different kind of people, I'm sure is really challenging.
Yeah, I haven't experienced it. I've never been the person answering the phones, but I worked in a call center in India.
Oh, really? In
about,
India?
Yeah, for a couple of years.
Okay.
I was a trainer.
Ah.
This was for a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was all the people that were calling about their mortgages and very emotional. But, like, it was very easy for me because basically my job was I was there because it looked good on paper for them to have an American there training how
yes.
to deal with Americans.
Mm-hmm.
But the people were so overworked, there was no one I could actually train.
Because
every month I'd plan a big training session and be like, oh, they don't have time, they're busy. I'm like, yeah, I know. And I would just literally... watch That's DVDs sad. In the library.
That's kind of sad yeah. that they're so overworked that they don't mm-hmm. have time to be trained.
Yeah.
They have to take these calls.
And you have to you know, when people call, you know, you call your bank, like, you'll be on hold for, like, 20
Forever.
Minutes. But that means that, like, as soon as someone finishes a call, they hear a beep, there's a next call.
Mm.
Not a single moment to, like, you know, there would be the people that scream, you know, scream the abuse. And,
I'm sure.
You know, I don't want to talk
sure.
to American. I don't yeah. want to talk to no one that can't speak no English no good. And I'm like, sir, you
don't speak
no English
that well.
No good.
speak no Americano.
Yeah, so they're like, you know, getting this abuse and getting upset and
right.
then beep, oh, here's another call. Like, I don't have time to process it. Or even like, you know, when you're dealing with mortgage, there's lots of numbers and you have to enter all the information in the computer.
It takes a while.
Yeah. And of course, like, if someone gets connected, they hang up suddenly.
Oh, yes.
You still have to enter all the information.
Right.
But at the same time, another person is giving you more information
oh
and
my
more
gosh.
Math. And you can't go to their account. And they're like, okay, yeah, I'm listening. They have to enter all this and remember what that person said while still listening to what this person said. And it's not
that
fun.
Actually gives us a really good chance mm-hmm. to kind of see things from the other side. Yeah. Literally, like, you're speaking to a stranger. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest. You know, when I was in California and I had a call and the call center happened to be in another country, there was a bit of frustration sometimes because I really couldn't understand what mm-hmm. the person was saying, not to be racist or xenophobic or anything like that. It's just we have different accents.
Yeah.
That person could have had a difficult time understanding my Californian accent, mm-hmm. right? It was really difficult sometimes communicating. And now we can see the other side, right?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's not them that choose to be the one to save the phone. It's the company that chooses to hire and that
yes.
is cheaper. And
right.
the people that I worked with,
mm-hmm.
you know, they did all right, like, compared to the other people that they lived around. They,
sure.
you know, they made good money. But the way that they do it is they make next to nothing, but most of their money comes from bonuses that
yeah.
are from getting perfect scores and making sure every customer's happy.
Which is so difficult.
Yeah. So our first story is mm-hmm. a story of my own that I had to do some detective work because, you know, there's this company that they hire. They call customers and ask them how it was. And
yes.
One of my best friends at work had a call that they called the customer and said, "You recently called this bank. How was
yes.
the situation?" They said it was the worst customer service I've ever seen in my life.
Ah.
They made me frustrated. They made me angry. Later, someone else fixed it, but this person made me so upset, and they gave her such a low score that she lost like 75% of her pay that month.
Ooh.
And I'm like, that doesn't seem right. This person is very nice.
Mm.
So I'm like, I have to go in detective mode.
Ah.
So I went and I went back in the recordings and I dug through every call they made that day until I found the exact call. Like, you don't know the person's name.
Yes.
I had to find some clues.
Yes, as
like,
to which
just
call.
Like Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it, and I heard the customer say, "Oh, thank you so much for fixing this. There was a person that I called yesterday that made me so angry," and I realized I solved the problem. And I took this to the boss, and I said, "I found the evidence. The person that called didn't tell them which person they were talking about. They just said, you called recently."
I see.
And so you can give this person their bonus back. And the boss said, nah. Nah, they sure it was a mistake, but I'm sure they made a customer angry that they didn't get caught. So is making up for it.
Your boss justified
yeah.
it?
My boss said, nah.
Not a good boss.
Take away their bonus. So that was a bad day for me and for that customer.
Because that's terrible.
Yeah. So not fun.
Mm, yeah.
There's also a few more silly, funny ones that I found online.
Mm-hmm.
This is our next one. This is a customer that called a tech support line.
Uh-huh.
And they said, "So, like, I poured coffee on my keyboard, and then I put it on the radiator to dry it out.
Uh-huh.
Then I ran it through the dishwasher, and then through the dryer. But now when I type, it does funny things. Do you think the coffee could have ruined it?"
Is this a real
this is a
story?
Real, this is what the person said when they called. I don't think it was the coffee that ruined it. Well, the coffee might have ruined it, but we had a lot of other chances.
Yeah, the subsequent other acts could have also contributed or actually been
the... Put it in the dishwasher and the dryer.
Do people not understand how electronics work?
Yeah, next story. Okay. This was a person that called to make a payment on their financing account.
Okay.
They asked if they'd like to pay with a credit card, which credit card they'd like to pay with.
Mm-hmm.
And the person said cash.
Mm.
And so the person on the phone, remind you, said they'd have to come in the store to pay with cash. And no matter how long they stayed on the call, the customer could not understand
why
they couldn't pay in cash
by phone.
Over the phone. Where would you put the cash?
I don't know.
You like the little holes in the front? You like,
I don't know.
Wind it up real small? I don't know.
Okay, the word visa has another meaning, like visa when you go to travel abroad, right? Mm-hmm. And I had a business in California where I asked my client, oh, by the way, when you come, we have to, you know, provide evidence that, you know, you're a legal, you know, resident of the United States. So make sure, you know, give me a copy of your visa, mm-hmm. and whatnot. And they literally blew up. They made a photocopy of one of their credit cards, and it was blown up to like a humongous size.
Yeah, well,
you know, miscommunications happen every day. It's a part of work. It's a part of life. So, mm-hmm. yes. All right, next.
Oh, this one hurt me a little bit.
It hurt? Oh no.
I was at an airport,
mm-hmm.
ready to leave for a vacation.
Yes.
When I got a panicked phone call from a client.
Ooh.
She stated that the video I sent her, part of a large marketing campaign, was missing the sound.
Mm.
After a lot of shouting and threats on her part, I agreed to go to her office and try to fix it.
Okay.
So this is a person that makes videos and had to cancel their flight because you can't get a refund at that point.
Sure.
To go fix this problem, there must have been a big mistake. There's no sound on the video.
Right.
After being escorted into her office, I played the video and double-checked her computer sound options. Then I unplugged her headphones. Then I charged her for my missing flight.
Oh, my gosh.
This person just...
She was trying to listen, but
through her speakers, but her headphones are plugged in and sitting on the desk.
Oh.
Didn't think... Before I make this person cancel their flight and miss their vacation...
Should I check the basics?
No, they didn't do that.
Mm-mm-mm.
But at least they charged for the missing flight.
That's, yeah, I hope she paid.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Next story says, working in tech support, I was walking a guy through how to reset his router, and he became frustrated. So he said, listen, sweetie, I know you're trying, but why don't you put a man on the phone who knows how to do this stuff? A lot of stories like that.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of stories where they... It could not possibly be because I don't know what I'm talking about.
It must be because of your gender. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not the greatest calls to get.
No.
Next person says, my husband worked in a call center as a loan collector.
Ooh, not a good job. In terms of the abuse you could get, right?
He once called a woman who got so angry at him, she proceeded to destroy her own kitchen and blame him for everything she did. She also told him exactly what she was doing very calmly while she was doing it.
Are you serious? Like,
she would say, you're making me so angry. I'm so angry I'm going to flip the table and this chair and the stove. Look, now I flipped the stove.
And it's all his fault.
Like, she's trashing her own house. Like,
right, trashing her own house because for whatever reason she couldn't repay, you know, a payment on a loan, but it's his fault, right?
Exactly, of course. Next person says, no matter what the customer says, I'm not allowed to disconnect the call. I had one customer call and say, I'm having a bad day, and you can't hang up on me, so I'm going to take it out on you. She proceeded to sling insults, death threats, and threaten my company with a nuclear bomb.
I would have kept her on the line, and then on another line, I would have called the police. You cannot, you know, threaten your company with a nuclear bomb. That's a terrorist threat.
They sure do.
But you can't hang up. You cannot.
Yeah, that's when I was in the call center. No, for no reason can you hang up on the customer.
Oh, my gosh.
Next one says, someone once called me and said she needed advice. This is a little more silly one than the last one. She asked me if she should have the sweet and sour chicken with white rice or chow mein.
Okay, what's odd about that?
I worked at a call center for a bank. I said... chow mein, and she said thanks.
Wow. So she just called a random, whomever and said,
yeah,
hey.
I need advice. People that work in banks are smart, you know. See what they think.
Sweet and sour chicken, some Chinese food. What goes better? That's a good one.
Very simple one that says, I got an email that said, call me if you didn't get this email.
Well, if you didn't get the email, how would you know to call?
Exactly.
Mm.
I have a weekly status conference call with a client every Tuesday at 2 p.m. They always run late, but rarely this late.
Okay.
At 2 p.m., I dial into the call and wait through the conference call music.
Okay.
At 2:30 p.m., I figured I gave them more than enough time to show up, so I sign off.
Mm.
At 2:40 p.m., I get an email from the client. Why are you not on the call? It's 2:40 p.m. We've all been waiting for you.
So I don't understand.
So the person...
Yes?
Just like, they were 40 minutes late.
and then like, they're like, oh, the Gaulle, you're not even here on time.
Yeah.
They thought 40 minutes was okay.
But this person had already been waiting.
For 40 minutes. Yes.
Next one. I got a phone call at 8 a.m.
Okay.
Client says, I'm very disappointed in you for not responding to my urgent emails. I flagged them urgent.
We're technically not open for another half hour. What time did you send the emails?
Around 3 a.m. I've been waiting 5 hours for you to respond. You're hardly treating it as urgent.
3 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, some people have to sleep.
Yeah.
Yes.
I get that sometimes when I'm dealing with clients and I'm like, I live in Korea.
The calculation.
All right. So next one, person calls someone and says, hi, I'm just following up on your call. What did you... And the client interrupts and says, look, I'm driving. How dare you call me when I'm on the road? I don't like talking on the phone when I'm driving, dear. You're just going to have to call me back when I'm done.
And like, you know, you're supposed to be psychic.
Yeah.
Like you're supposed to know.
They just called. I don't blame them.
And you're supposed to know that what they're doing at every moment of the day, huh?
Yep. Next one says, I do tech support over the phone. On my vacation, I got a call. Hey, sorry to call you on your holiday. My boss has just found out about me running a business on the side and has blocked me from accessing my webmail. I just need you to log in and read some emails to me.
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
So this person's
did something illegal against the company.
Against the company, and they want the customer service agent who's on their vacation
to do something illegal.
Also do something illegal, go against the boss. I mean, that's not necessarily illegal. That, you know, it's just doing other work for another company while you're working for this company. But, you know, it's...
But I'm sure if he had some sort of, like, contract with the company saying, you know,
Yeah. And then just what I saw a lot of is just people saying that I did tech support at a cable company call center on and off for years. People, including myself, regularly sought treatment for job-related anxiety, ADD, and repetitive stress disorders. The therapist I saw told me that these were common occupational hazards for the people they saw from call centers, and I knew many other reps that required a mental holiday to recover from the constant abuse.
Oh, my goodness.
So there's just there's a lot of things people have to deal with, so just be nice when you when you call places. You know, maybe you have a beef with a company. The person on the phone.
Right. They didn't make the product that you're complaining about.
The people that I knew, they were not happy with the policies either, but it's their job just to help you deal with them. So
that's right.
Let them help you and don't yell at them for it.
Yes. Thank you so much. This actually, I'm sure, will allow people to once again see the other side of the phone call. So thank you for bringing this in for Worked Up. Thank you, Ryan. Mm-hmm. All right. Time to take a little song break. Here is Answering Bell by Ryan Adams. Well, it is time to give you the correct answer to a quiz I asked you. Which country has the highest minimum wage in the world? Ooh, well, the correct answer is number one, Australia. Australian workers earn about $13.76. That's in US dollars, by the way, or a little over 14,000 won per hour. If we compare it to South Korea, which is it stands at 7,530 won. You might think it's awfully low, but of course, that's just, you know, the straight figures. That's not taking into account cost of living and other figures as well. Of course, the goal of South Korea is to raise the minimum wage to 10,000 won by the year 2020. We'll see how that goes. In the meantime, I do want to thank you so much for all your messages. I also see 8558 name texting in. Yes, that actually... No, it's not South Korea. It is Australia, but thank you for texting in nonetheless. I also see Sonushi sending in the correct message as well. For a winner today, let's go with Sonushi. You are a winner. Congratulations. Morning Wave in Busan here on BEFM. Busan Yonghwa Bangsong is produced by Chang Hyun-jun, written by Haley Sa and Jung Sona, hosted by yours truly, Catherine. Of course, you hear the song in the background. This is Push Forward by Lena. So enjoy. Stay tuned for On the Road with Laura. Bye-bye, everybody.